Testing.
Good evening. Welcome to the Signs and Seasons program with Minister Gabri Amlak and Samara Bruchi. Thank you for joining us in our broadband salutations to our global family. And the purpose of the Signs and Seasons broadcast are to familiarize our listeners with the practical and spiritual aspects of astrology and related metaphysical sciences. And good evening, Sister Samara.
Good evening, Minister.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Year three, thank you for joining us today. In the first part of our show, we are going to talk about the universal, the metaphysical meaning of the Easter season, and we have two exciting, informative guests at the bottom of the hour. The first lady is going to talk, very interesting lady, is going to talk to us about the spiritual significance of the Hebrew alphabet, the Kabbalah, etc., Gila Nisan. And following her, we're going to have a very interesting lady, Dawn Fezende. She's going to talk to us about the Wesak, this particular period that we're going through now, and the particular period that's going through the time that we're passing through, that the celebrating the birth, life, and ascension of the Buddha. Starting with the message of this season, the knowledge of the language of religious symbolism is the key to an in-depth understanding of biblical scriptures, which is badly needed in the world today. One of the greatest benefits derived from this seldom-used approach to biblical studies is the discovery of the practical application of biblical wisdom to the affairs of our daily lives. We find ourselves going to the church every Easter season and pretty much hearing the same message, but not really understanding it from its most practical level. And so when we understand it from a symbolical point of view, we realize that the events that culminated in the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus the Christ, the main objective is to increase our understanding of how these events relate to our personal spiritual walk. As we are fortunate enough today to have one of our guests talk to us about the life and teachings of the Buddha and how his life and teachings relate to us. And also going to talk to the young lady Gila Nisan about how the Hebraic, Aramaic teachings relate to our spiritual walk so that we can get a broader understanding. When understood from the highest perspective, the life and teachings of Jesus, for example, whether you look at them as being allegorical or historical, give a graphic portrayal of the experiences that every person encounters in his or her spiritual quest, on whatever path he or she happens to be on. The steps, the challenges are the same. The 40 days of fasting and prayer symbolize the preparatory phase of cleansing and attunement, tuning up, tuning in, or tuning up, which is essential to tuning in, which that's why they say attunement, which is an absolutely necessity for progress to and through the advanced stages of spiritual development on every path of spiritual endeavor. We also have the 14 stations of the cross. Those of you listeners who are familiar with the Catholic tradition realize that those 14 stages are actually initiatory stages that were in existence, part of the religious teachings long before Catholicism or Christianity came about. So it's a universal teaching in every way. The temptations that that Satan, well, the negative force called Satan by Christians, used to test Jesus remind us of the test that every individual must pass on the path to God realization. And with every achievement, with every step that we take higher than the test, just as in any other school, the school of life, then the tests become more challenging and more difficult. The transfiguration of the body of Jesus into a vessel of radiant spiritual light and the means by which this rare accomplishment is achieved is also should be considered an attainable objective, but this is also reflective of what everyone must go through. You can't pour new wine into old bottles. And so, and this piece of the information is very important because many of us don't really, really understand that cleansing of the physical body is a major part of spiritual achievement. You cannot pour new wine into old bottles. And so one of the challenges is we have to take this physical organism from AM to FM to XM so then we can be anointed, so to speak, by those higher spiritual frequencies. And that's really the crux of the matter in terms of our spiritual trip. The spiritual trip has to do with whether it's attaining samadhi, nirvana, Christ consciousness. The spiritual trip has to do with being able to access higher frequencies of light. And so when we interpret this season, Palm Sunday and Easter, from a symbolical point of view, we see that they are actually two of the most enlightening and inspiring stories in the Christian Bible. For example, Jesus riding into Jerusalem, the city of peace, on a donkey. The donkey is stubborn, fixed, has fixed habits. The donkey greeted by people with palm branches represent the victory of spirit in overcoming the stubborn tendencies of the carnal human personality that we all have to work with, grapple with. We hear that no man could ride the donkey into Jerusalem, no man could mount the donkey but through the Christ. Well, no man can mount the donkey through unless we go through our spiritual, unless we develop a connection with our spiritual essence, because our carnal self, only a person who is spiritually empowered can do that. And you see, another point about this season is that when it's personalized, then people go to whatever religious edifice they visit at this time of year, and then they look at it from a personal perspective. Say, ha, how does this reflect my achievements this year? The palm that Christians wear in the form, shape of a cross represents the victory over the carnal habits that we are so addicted to until we are able to become spiritually empowered. So then Palm Sunday represents victory. Palm branches, which come from extremely tall trees that form into a crown at the top, are used in recognition of great achievements and the royal status earned by extraordinary achievements. And what may seem easy to someone may be difficult to someone else. So we may say, okay, this Palm Sunday, I overcame the urge to smoke so many cigarettes, eat so much chocolate, lose my temper, whatever habits that we all have that need to be overcome. So each Palm Sunday, we hopefully will have victory over some aspect, but particularly those of us who are aspiring, who are really struggling to enhance our spiritual consciousness. And so for those who have just tuned in, you are listening to BBS Radio with Minister Gabrielle Mlack and Sister Samar Baruti. And today, in accordance with the season, we are exploring the first part of our program, the universal message of the resurrected Christ as it relates to all of humanity. And we're going to bring our two distinguished guests on at the bottom of the hour in about 19 minutes. So now, palm branches, which we know come from extremely tall trees. We're talking about how this whole Easter Palm Sunday ritual, what it has to do with us as a human family. The resurrection of the Christ represents the resurrection of the Buddha faculty, the monad, the Atman, the spark of divinity within each one of us. And so entering into Jerusalem, the city of peace, is only possible for those who attained and sublimated the forces of their lower animal nature. And so each Palm Sunday, hopefully, we've had victory over some might be some small aspect. But one step, each journey starts with one step. I find one of the most interesting parts of this Easter scenario is the Judas. If you're familiar with the teachings of George Ivan Gurdjieff, the Armenian sage of the Fourth Way, he explained that each one of us has a chief feature, and all of our hang-ups fall under that chief feature and are supported by that chief feature. It is indeed the umbrella, the spoke, the hub. And so a subtle and powerful problem we all encounter when attempting to identify the undermining influence of these animal forces is represented by Judas, the infamous disciple, who betrayed the Master Jesus. Well, Judas, you see, is a symbol of the chief negative characteristic in our personality. We all have a Judas factor. One of the things that we find out very, very in an elaborate form when we do astrology charts, we takes us right to those squares and those oppositions that stop us from liberating, expressing our higher self. And so this chief negative characteristic often clothes itself in subtle tactics, in elaborate justifications. This is like in the book of Genesis when you find Adam and Eve symbolically cover themselves with fig leaves. So we cover ourselves with fig leaves to so-called hide our infringements. And so when we find out what our infringements are, that takes us on to another level. We see, because the remorseful act of resorted to by Judas of suicide is symbolical of the destruction of self-defeating attitudes and behavior patterns. When we finally are forced to face the consequences of our negative thoughts, emotions, and actions, no Judas, no crucifixion, no resurrection. And so this is all part of our journey on the spiritual path. What's also I find very interesting, the 30 pieces of silver which Judas was paid to sell out his spiritual mentor, and they are symbolical of the total self-deception and denial of the mental, emotional, and psychological levels of our personalities. Metal, as you know, is associated with the moon. Well, the moon has no light of its own, but it appears to have a light. And so this planet, whose apparent light is actually an illusion. Silver represents the state of lunacy expressed through the belief that true happiness can be realized through material possessions. 30, then, is 3 times 10. And 3 is the number of creativity. 10 represents manifestation. 10 spheres, 10 sephira, 10, the number that we tithe, 10 commandments, 10, always manifestation. And then we have the sentence on the cross to die, which is a symbol of the physical body, once again, with outstretched arms. Well, this is the eventual fate of the carnal habits and desires of every person who responds to the call of his or her divine nature and destiny. Whether that be I'm going to become a Muslim, I'm going to be a Buddhist, I'm going to be a Yoruba, I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to be a Khan, I'm going to follow Zen, Confucius, whatever. We're sentenced to that negative part of us that carnal, non-spiritualized part is sentenced to death once we make that commitment. Once that urge at Christmas time, we get represented by Christmas, once that the birth of our spiritual desire is born, then we know that there's a part of us that has to go. So then we have Jesus falling three times. So Jesus falling three times on the way to the cross informs those who desire spiritual liberation that attempting to free ourselves from the carnal influences that influence the body, the mind, and emotions is a difficult but surmountable task. The crucifixion, and you see what happened. We find that Jesus falls three times. The third fall is the hardest because the first fall represents the body, physical habits. The next represents the mind. And you see, the falls became more difficult. The third fall was the emotion. That means attachments we had to habits perhaps for lifetimes. That's the most difficult fall, three times. So now the five wounds on the body of Jesus represent the five passions, ego, anger, greed, lust, attachment, that must be sublimated before we can attain our spiritual rebirth. And lastly, the huge stone at the tomb, worldly factors and forces that attempt to imprison the uncomfortable human spirit are symbolized by the huge stone placed at the entrance of the tomb. And finally, the 3 days in the tomb prior to the resurrection represent the period of gestation required to initiate the birth of our newly awakened spiritual identity, the formulation of this new self in the womb of our soul, and the consequent modification of every aspect of our personality. So you see, this represents a wonderful period for all of us. And you might also think about the Easter ritual, the Easter eggs, the gold and the silver, the lunar and solar forces that are here, because we celebrate Easter, as you know, on this new moon after the full moon. And so it's a wonderful period. It doesn't. We often throw the baby away with the washwater. Oh, I'm not going to celebrate Ramadan because I'm not a Muslim. I'm not going to celebrate Vaisakh because I'm not a Buddhist. I'm not going to celebrate Easter. No, when any group on the planet is celebrating a particular holy day, we can tune into that current of energy, and it'll take us further on whatever path we happen to be on. We have to get beyond the narrow consciousness that allows us not to take advantage of these wonderful, wonderful opportunities for spiritual growth and development. We are, as one of my first guests has on her, if there is no peace on the planet, it is because we forgot that we belong to each other. The Mayans explained to us that, and the other esoteric groups, is that we all come into the galaxy through the great sun, the galactic core, through the sun. So we all have this umbilical cord that ties us all together as a global family. We need to really, really begin to understand that more, and that's why we're here with you, this program and the other programs on BBS Radio. Sister Samara, how are you today?
I am doing fantastic, Minister Unluck.
Yeah, we're glad to have you with you. Did you have any comments to make on what we just said about the message of this time of year?
You have said it brilliantly as usual. I have nothing to add. I've been inspired.
All right. Well, Sister Samara actually is the power behind the throne. She is a brilliant partner to work with in every aspect. So, Brother Doug, we have nine minutes in this part of the hour, but we are ready if our guests are there. I want to give you the numbers to call if you would like to call and to have a mini profile. Sister Samara, did you have anyone that you knew who wanted to have a mini profile today that was going to call in?
Not yet. I'm waiting to hear back. If I do, I'll let you know.
Oh, please do. Doug, if we have anyone ready to go on and have a profile.
Maybe we can do Doug. Doug might like one.
Okay, and maybe one of our guests, what we can do, if there's anyone in the studio or anyone who would like to have a profile of their astrological energies. I would use their name and their date of birth and give them a profile. You know, that's discreet in terms of the kind of things that we talk about on the air. But we take your name, your date of birth, and the numbers that you need to call. Doug, I need you to give me that number again, please, that our guest should call into. For our guest to call and give us so that they can be on the air with us. You're listening here to Signs and Seasons, and we're going to have the call-in number for you in a moment where you can call and you can get a profile on your energies. One of the purposes of this program is to show people, to give people an understanding of the practical purposes, the practical reason, use of these energies of astrology, numerology, and tarot. There's so much of a frightening, spooky attitude towards these teachings, and we're really trying to eliminate that and help people get more clarity on how we can use these teachings to our benefit. Astrology, numerology, and tarot are actually psychic sciences. When I say psychic sciences, that word frightens some people. Psychic, the word psychic, you know, comes from soul. And soul refers to the most subtle body energy field that the spirit dons. And so these teachings help us to understand the innermost aspect of every dimension of life. And so when we do an astrological reading or use the tarot or numerology, we're actually looking into the person's innermost self. And it really gives a lot of insight into how we can use these systems to get more clarity. One of the things I was saying to a client of mine earlier is that it is unfortunate that so many things happen around us that we are not clear on that could be avoided if we understood the inner dynamics and the inner dimensions, that we would be able to avoid, goodness gracious, so many of the challenges. I work with people who we can look into, let's say, for example, a court case, whether it's the proper time. I see people that are caught up in all kind of negative situations. If they only understood how to use those situations, understand the energy behind them, they could take a different attitude and different approach. The numbers you want to call, 888-627-6008. You can also call 530-320-7602. And we can give you, as I just said, some insight in your particular energy patterns. Sister Samara, hello? Are you there? Hello? 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 Okay. Good evening. And here we are. So we've been talking to you, our first part of the show, we talked about the universal message of the resurrected Christ. And now I'd like to take this opportunity to bring our first guest, who's going to give us some information, some much-needed information, on the practical and spiritual aspect of the Hebrew letters, Gila Nissan. Ms. Nissan, how are you today?
I am feeling great and delighted to talk to you, Minister Amlak.
Yes, ma'am. And you, And thank you for being available. It was a last-minute situation.
I
want to thank you. You're one of my other guests could not make it today. And I wanted you, I know I didn't have but so much time, so I said, okay, I will ask Sister Gila. Is it Gila?
Yes, my name is Gila, like Havana Gila. Do you know this song?
Oh, yes, yes. I told you I used to do Jewish bar mitzvahs, right?
Yes, you
in
told
New York
me.
City. Yeah, I used to do Havana Gila. I used to do Boy of Mine here as a singer early in the 60s. Okay, so the reason that I asked you to come on, because I know many of our guests are interested in understanding the letters. First of all, I'd like to ask, what is it that got you involved in this aspect or this dimension? And I'd also like to introduce you first to Sister Samara, my co-host. Sister Samara, are you on? Hello? Oh, I guess I don't know if they were able to connect Samara back. Okay. Sister Gila, I was asking you, what is it that motivated you?
Samara is with us now.
Good. Okay. Sister Samara?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're having a little challenge, listeners, with our new installed technology, but it's going to be fine in a minute, and it's actually going to help improve the frequencies and the programs that we can bring forth to you, so please be patient with us. Samara, I was just saying hello to Gila Nissan. She's going to give us the first interview. You might want to say hello.
Hi, Gila. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Hi, Samara. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. I would love to talk about the Hebrew letters. If we have a moment, a comment to add about Judah and about what Gurdjieff. I was delighted to see that you are including Gurdjieff's ideas in your explanations of things. But he said something so unusual about Judah. And would it be appropriate to include it here or not really?
Please.
I wonder, because Gurdjieff said that Judah did not really betrayed his master. Gurdjieff really breaks the habitual notion that he betrayed his master, and he says that Judah was actually the most loyal servant of Yeshu, and Yeshu trusted him to appoint him to play the role of that he had to play in what was going, in what was about to take place. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, how do you perceive this reverse of role that Gurdjieff claims that Judah was really playing?
Wait, you're asking me how do I believe the current story or the traditional story of Judas was turned around?
What Gurdjieff says is that Judas was not betraying his master, that he was chosen by his master to play the hardest role, which is to betray him.
I'm actually familiar with that thought process of Judah. And when I did hear that, I thought it was very profound and actually made a lot of sense on many levels. And Minister Amlak, it is that Judah did not betray Jesus, our Joshua. He, in fact, was chosen as the most loyal and trusted disciple to play that role of betrayal.
Right.
So it was something that was decided on. I will use my friend, my trusted ally, to do this for me.
Okay, I can totally accept that. You know, when you look at it, when it's looked at it from that perspective, since we're all playing a role, I have not heard that mentioned, but I can totally accept that.
And I think
that's
John Bennett.
That's something the Christendom is definitely not aware of that, you know, in general.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where it was twisted around, but it definitely was turned around.
Well, I can, if you, I know that John Bennett, who was a student of Guruji, wrote about that.
Oh, yeah, you see, I didn't get that, I didn't really get that from Gurdjieff, but I'm glad that you said that. So you were connecting that with Gurdjieff?
Well, I am very familiar with his cosmology. I've studied him for many years.
Okay. Yeah, I never heard him. I didn't know he mentioned the term. Is that where you're saying it came from, that Gurdjieff was one of the exponents of that story that you just were talking about?
I'm saying that John Bennett, who is one of Gurdjieff's major teachers, mentioned it in a book that he wrote about Christianity that I cannot recall the exact name right now. But it's kind of the most esoteric explanation of this event, because it's, of course, is a very important event in the life of not only Yeshu and his disciples, but also our understanding for people who are attaching their development to what was really happening there. It could be interesting to try to include this approach in in the understanding.
Right, it's a very revolutionary approach. I never discovered that in Gurdjieff's works. It's a very interesting approach. I think that people in your level and our level would be more open to that idea. That you know, but I don't think the traditional church would be ready to embrace that.
No, we are ready for very little, but it's nice to even know what's waiting for us to be ready for.
Right. I'm flowing along at 5:33, so we have 27 minutes and another guest to interview, so I want you
okay,
to
let me go to the letter.
Give us information. Give me some information on,
okay, first
the,
of all,
on the letters, excuse
I've been...
me, on the letters as they were known to be special. Why did they... I know they were known to be special throughout time, so, but why do they appear now at this particular point?
Okay, so you're right. The letters have been a source of fascination to all the Kabbalists. And actually, they were the inspiration for the Kabbalists when they meditate on the letters to go deeply into the levels of secret and hints that we are all eager in our time to know and understand. But what's happening today, well, you know, we live in a period that is being defined sometimes as the paradigm shift time. The letters are surfacing again with a new meaning and new insight that is actually, they are asking us to use them not exactly to create a new reality, but to use them to discover and reveal everything that is in potentiality waiting to come to actuality. So the letters has the power to help us move from where we are, which is habitual and which is restricted and narrow, into a wider, including space. So that's their contribution. And as you are talking about the season, it's even double important to mention that we are moving into the month, the Hebrew month of Nisan, which is a month of miracles, where children of Israel are moving from a narrow place to a wider place. And it's a month of capability to receive messages.
Is it called a special month because it's following the whole vernal equinox? And why is it considered a special month?
Well, first of all, when you look at the word Nisan, the word Nes, miracle, is included in it. It's the month of redemption because in this movement of humanity moving from slavery into freedom, in this movement, the Exodus from Egypt is falling on this month. So that's the first Hebrew month of the 12 Hebrew months. And it has the power to charge all the rest of the month with miracles and capabilities of expansion.
Okay, what I'm keeping my eye on, we have 8 minutes to go. What I wanted to know, and so I can't go in depth where I'd like to, but we'll, of course, come back again. What are the sources of these new insights on the letters? When you say new, is anything new? Is it just new to our generation, this particular era?
You know that the priests in the temple knew all the secrets of the letters, but not all the secrets were allowed to be revealed at that time. People were not ready. And it seems like we are moving now into a time where we are more ready to use the letters to change and create a new reality. So what's special about them, the source of the letters is really Zoharic. Zoharic means the Book of Splendor.
Okay.
It's the Book of the Zohar that was attributed to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
Okay.
And it's from the second century. It's where, you know, Kabbalah is based on that book. It's a what's special about this book is that the language that the book is using is a language that penetrates the heart directly, our understanding. It's more feminine, flexible, inclusive. It's a language that creates the experience of the words, not only the words and the ideas, but experiencing them. It's full of colors. It's in movement. It has lightness. It's not an academic pursuit. It's not a mental type of systematic material. It is not fixed in that way. It is kind of moving our thinking to think differently, to think in a more dialectic way, to move in a direction that can embrace opposites, that completes each other, not negate each other. Because,
so,
you know, life is full of paradoxes. We're trying to put them together.
Are you presenting this, the Hebrew letters, as a galactic, as a universal possession rather than belonging to any particular culture? Is that how we're looking at it now?
I think that it's a full cosmology. You actually don't even need to know Hebrew in order to use the power of the letters to change our reality.
Okay, so are you in your book presenting it to the global family? You know, usually you have groups that have a tendency to claim a particular technology or spiritual technology as their own. So are you saying that we're presenting it to the global family?
Yes. It is a cosmology. It's a universal cosmology. Because you know that in the first verse of Genesis, the world is created by the power of the 22 cosmic forces that are called, among other names, letters. But they are not only letters.
Okay, sister, we've got 4 minutes left. Sister Samara?
Yes, sir.
We're waiting for you to offer you. Did you have any comments or questions that you want to ask?
No, not at this time. No, I'm going to respect the 4 minutes and allow Miss Nissan to say anything that she'd like to say. Give us her website, phone number that people can reach her.
Okay, before you go, what surprised you the most on as you were working with the letters? What is it that surprised you the most? And then, of course, you can follow by giving us the information Sister Samara just mentioned.
Well, I have to say that I just was so touched deeply. Those insights, the way they appeared, there are insights that although I was teaching the spirituality of the Hebrew letter for 25 years, what appeared like 2 years ago was new. It was new to me, and it's a surprise, you know. It's a gift of understanding that appears and that you know that you need to spread because the letters need to be used. So, of course, if you want, the book is not finished. I'm in the middle of writing it. And if anybody want to know a little bit more about it, then I have it. I have the material in my website, which is www.thehebrewletterinsingular.com, or you can go to Facebook under Kabbalat Otiyot, meaning receiving of the letters, and I spell it K-A-B-B-A-L-A-T, and Otiyot is O-T-I-Y-O-T.
Okay, and we're going to have information on our site relating to this program, and also have the tape of the day's show available in our archives. So I'm hoping that this is going to be the beginning of a long, enlightening relationship for everyone involved. Okay, Sister Nissan?
Yes, sounds splendid to me.
Hmm?
Sounds really exciting to me.
Oh yes, it is, and this is such an awesome period. That's why I was so anxious to have you be on today, and I want to thank you for making yourself available in such a short period of time. And so until next time, we're going to thank you very much. You can stay on if you like, because we have another lady that you may be interested in hearing, whom I know, realize you understand, Sister Dawn Fazin. So thank you once again, Sister Nissan.
Thank you very much, and a happy spring holiday.
Yes.
Thank you.
So now we're going to have our next guest come on, and our next guest is going to talk to us about another aspect of this, another celebration this time of year, which is very interesting that we all from the different cultures are aware of the kind of energies that are happening right now. So if Doug is ready, we are ready for our next guest. So, and she's going to explain to us how we can celebrate this season from another perspective.
And, Minister, I'm not... Go ahead. Is Dawn on?
Yes, here I am.
Okay. Hi, Doug. Hi, Doug. Dawn, how are you?
That's okay.
That I got my
D's. Probably been talking to a lot of people lately.
Yes. Dawn, thank you for being with us also at such short notice. And
I'm
very
glad to be here.
Yes. So maybe you give us some insight on your organization and, of course, what you are doing with Mount Shasta, is it?
Yes, Mount Shasta in Northern California. It's one of the seven sacred mountains on the planet.
Say it again?
I don't know the other seven, only Mount Fuji. But
Mount Shasta?
Yeah, Mount Shasta.
You said it's one of the biggest mountains on the planet?
One of the seven sacred mountains.
I didn't know. You know, I can't hear you, so if you can talk a little louder.
Hold on.
I don't know if it's us.
Let me switch a bit. Is this better?
Yeah, that's better.
Can you hear me better now?
A little bit.
Okay.
So, you were talking about the seven biggest Mount Shasta. Okay.
Not biggest.
Sacred.
Sacred. There are seven sacred mountains mentioned in the
Alice Bailey materials. Oh, sacred mountains.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mount Shasta is one of them.
Hmm?
Mount Shasta is one of them, and the only other one I'm sure about is Mount Fuji. I don't know
okay.
the names of the others.
Okay, so the your just briefly your task with the particular organization that you are with now is what?
At this point in time, we are doing the celebration of the Wesak, which is the birth, death, and enlightenment of the Buddha.
Right.
We don't celebrate it as a Buddhist community. We open it up to all sorts of spiritual endeavor because this is a small town but is known for its variety of spiritual pursuit. So we open it up. We let people come from all over the world. We'll have crystal skulls. We'll have Edgar Cayce representatives. Mm. We'll have archaeologists from Egypt. We'll have Gila, who you just spoke with. We're going to have Ruth Sharon, who speaks at the United Nations on filmmaking and proper media. We'll have Dr. Meg out of Seattle with us. And everyone will be together to be in the energies of this Wesak, which will help
okay,
you...
Excuse me for not knowing, and I'm not hearing too well on this end. Excuse my ignorance, Mount Shasta is in what part of California?
It's in the very northern part of California, almost to Oregon. We're
and that's
an
the
hour
name of the
south
place?
Of Oregon.
And that's the name of the place?
Mount Shasta, yes it is.
I see,
Mount Shasta
I see, okay.
City and Mount Shasta Mountain.
All right, I got you. All right. But I was asking you also, you're also connected with an organization. You're the executive director of it?
I'm the executive director of Meals on Wheels.
I see.
And with Alliance for Humanity, which is the 501c3 that manages Meals on Wheels.
Okay. All right.
The celebration I'm sorry?
I was just trying to connect the two.
Oh, I see. Well, we do the celebration. We took it over from the person who had it in the beginning, who passed away. He handed it to me. And we converted the proceeds of it, anyway, into a donation for the Meals on Wheels program that we run here. We haven't changed very much what we do. We still use it as a spiritual pursuit. Mount Shasta is a sort of a beaming radio of transmission of energies. There's a religion here that says Mount Shasta is the place where Christ's energy first enters the planet, and then it's beamed around the planetary grid for people to access. The same thing happens at Wesak. It's the energy of the Buddha and the Christ, and they blend that energy with ascended beings, and they issue a combined blessing to humanity, and it comes through this mountain. And it's just an incredibly strong and empowering place on its own without any assistance from us. And so you add that plus all of these people coming here with like mind and like goal, two or more, as you know they're the saying, I'm sure, where two or more are gathered, there am I. It's a very, very powerful celebration.
What kind of population do you expect to be there? And what is the exact date that they're having?
It's the weekend of May 4th through 6th. It is always at the full moon in May, which is believed to be the birth of Buddha. Now, it's like Christmas. Nobody knows for sure when Jesus was actually born, so they picked a day. Well, in the 1950s, the king of Thailand said the first full moon of May. But then we have Vedic astrologers who managed to track back what they know about the birth of Buddha, and from what they track all the way to the birth of Christ, they can see that the Buddha was also born in the month of May, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So they always celebrate it at the full moon of May. And the full moon of May is considered the most powerful moon of the year. It's the first spring moon, really. And it's the first moon that really melts the snow and brings forth new life. Everything's blooming and amazing in May.
Now, I suppose some of our listeners might want to know, since they are going to, how many people did you say you may be expecting again?
We usually get between 300 and 600 people here.
Okay. Goodness, that seemed like a small amount of people for such a wonderful ceremony.
Well,
so
we're
a small town.
I tell you, if we have had in the past, we've had up to 1,200 people here.
I got
but
you.
We have not had that number since the original person passed, because he used to give away a lot of tickets to get that number. He had a set number in mind. We would rather let it be organic and let the energies decide.
You know, if I may, years ago, I used to celebrate Vesak, and there was usually, I understand May being the first and the most powerful, but we celebrated three full moons.
Right.
Are there other full moon celebrations for Vesak?
The moon of April, or the moon of Aries, as they call it, and it's loosely translated because in America and in the West, people have assumed that that was under the tropical zodiac, whereas all of these people were born under the Vedic or esoteric charts. So they call it the moon of Aries, meaning April, and that is the first moon. And then the second moon, that's the moon of the Christ. The second moon is the Buddha full moon, and that's the moon that we're celebrating at Vesak. And the third is the Gemini moon, which is the moon of the humanities. And these are supposed to be ancient celebrations that predate most religions, where these three aspects of the rebirthing of the earth after winter are blended. And at the end of that period of time, of course, people are planting and harvesting and so forth and so on. Life goes on.
So could you repeat what those three moons represent again? The Aries
is the moon of the Christ.
Okay.
The Aries moon. And I'm not going to say the April moon because I still, you know, we still have to decide the Vedic or tropical chart. So the second moon, the May moon, is the Buddha moon. And the June moon, the Gemini moon, is the moon of humanity.
Gotcha.
And in ancient times, there was a festival around each one of those three moons.
I suppose there's going to be a lot of commerce happening. People might want to know where do the proceeds go.
The proceeds are going to go to Meals on Wheels. All of the teachers are volunteering their time to be with us. And we will have some vendors, but we limit that number. We only take 28 or 30, depending on what size booth they order, because they do have to make some money. The teachers are allowed to sell their products, and the teachers are also selling tickets, and if they sell a ticket, they keep commission from the ticket. We don't want people to go away feeling like we don't appreciate them, you know. But our major profit from this goes to support our local Meals on Wheels program. And the Meals on Wheels, I'm sure you know, is a program that actually drives food to the homes of, in our case, senior citizens who cannot feed themselves for whatever reason. And we take the food to them, we deliver it, we watch them eat it, then we go home. And if anything's wrong, we'll call the families. But many, many times, our drivers are the only human being that these people see during the week. So we make sure that we have very good people. And we need to keep the whole idea and energy of this flowing. So for me, it was a no-brainer. Buddha preached about compassion, and I think the programs like Meals on Wheels are the ultimate display of compassion.
About 1 minute.
So we're where do you mostly cater to? I mean, what part of, is it just in that particular area, or do you go to different other places around the country? Wheels on Meals.
Well, we personally only do our area. That's how it works with all of the organizations. There is a Meals on Wheels Association of America, which is a national organization. It's our face. It's our advocate group, if you will. But it is not a national program. It does receive funding from the national government in some cases, not all cases. They distribute it through Meals on Wheels Association of America or through the local state, and the state decides how much each individual program gets. Usually, that's not nearly enough to do what has to be done. Therefore, we do fundraisers all the time to make sure that people who need it are getting fed.
John, is there...
Go ahead, Gabby. No, ladies first, go ahead.
You guys are being too polite.
Well, you said Mount Shasta is in the furthest tip of Northern California?
It's Northern California.
Is there somewhere we can get information on WESAC, a website, phone number?
Yes, WESAC, WESAC.us.
Ah.
And that's our website. You can look through our articles, and it'll give you a better understanding, much better than I can probably, of what WESAC is and why we do it. That also has a link to the Meals on Wheels page. We don't put that directly on there. We do put a, there's a button called How We Serve, and it kind of explains that that's what we're up to.
Okay, Dawn, I have 2 minutes. So in those 2 minutes, can you leave some thought, some idea with us, sort of perhaps the whole thing will dawn on our consciousness?
This is going to be an amazing WESAC. It's 2012 at a very powerful place in a very powerful time. We have speakers who are amazing teachers. We have Einstein, the Crystal Skull, and Carolyn Ford. We have Raymond Tarpe, who is an Edgar Cayce historian and scholar.
Okay, we're going off right. We got to go right off right now. You got to put two other shows on. Dawn, thank you very much. Sorry for the abrupt departure. I waited too long.
Okay.
Thanks for showing. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay.